Welcome, everyone, and thanks for taking the time out of your days to come down and listen to the quarterly update from Dexus Property Group. Format of today is fairly informal. What we'll be doing is giving you a brief presentation. Hopefully, we'll like to wrap this up within the hour. We'll then undertake the property tours, and then those of you that are free can come back and join us for a drink. During the course of the presentation today, we'll walk through the booklet. Feel free to ask any questions as we go through, and we'll endeavour to do our best to answer them. Just with me today is Michael Christensen, that works with Craig in our finance area, just on my left. Ross DeVernay, our head of Captrans and Strategy. Kevin George, who runs Office and Industrial. Amanda Kenny, Richard Gehring, Scott Travis and Mark Cuddy, who effectively run our property portfolios. And Andrew Whiteside, that oversees our development. So if we just quickly look where Dexus is today. So as we sit here today, we have about $13.1 billion of assets under management. We have about $7.1 billion on our balance sheet, which primarily consists of Australian office. It's about 78%. Industrial sits at about 22%. Our weightings overall, you know, we target 80-20, but as I've said before, we're not slaves to weightings. You know, we will be a bit opportunistic where we allocate that capital. But at the moment, we're comfortable of aiming towards that 80-20. On a funds management business, that's grown now to $6 billion, and we've had a fair amount of success there over the past 12 months, and the guys will touch on that later on this afternoon. As far as the first quarter is concerned, we've had made really solid progress on all of our strategic objectives. You know, from an office perspective, you know, we've seen in what is quite a challenging market, and the guys will touch on that as well, the guys have really delivered some outstanding leasing outcomes. We've been able to also exit out of our last remaining US property, and as we announced earlier or late last week, we reinvested into what we think is an exceptional opportunity up in Brisbane, and Ross will touch on that later on in the presentation, just how we've looked to de-risk that that property and that acquisition from a Dexus perspective. If we talk about our core capabilities, you know, we have completed the facilities management. We embedded an electronic system through, which takes out a lot of manual processes. That was completed during the quarter, and we're starting to get the benefits of that. We're also continually work on other systems and processes to make ourselves more efficient at actually running and managing the assets. If we talk about capital partnerships and our third-party business, once again, there's been a lot of success there. I think we're up to now over $830 million that we've raised for the year. I mean, the key there is not so much raising the capital right now because it's actually finding the product. And I think, you know, we can all read about, you know, the capital looking to find a home. The key for the next sort of 12 to 24 months is finding suitable product to invest that capital in. And finally, from a capital and risk management perspective, you know, one of the most pleasing aspects of the quarter, when we sat here probably 12 to 18 months ago, everyone was questioning across the sector and the industry, you know, are we going to be able to get finance? Are we going to get good tenure? And as we announced yesterday, the ability to get debt in excess of 10 years, you know, between 10 and 15 years, at the kind of rates we were bringing it back at is just outstanding and should augur well both for Dexus and also for the industry. Just to touch on a couple of numbers before handing over to Michael. You know, the team's leased over 90,000 square metres across office and industrial. The office portfolio has delivered for the 12 months ending 31 March a total return of 10.6%. The if we look at our gearing, it sits around 29.4%. And as I said before, we've had an 8.4% increase in FUM in our third-party business for the year. And on that note, I'll hand over to Michael.
Thanks, Darren. Good afternoon, everyone. So from a capital management perspective, our major activities include the repayment of and repatriation of all our US dollar debt as a result of settling the West Coast and Glendale portfolios and the closing out of our acquisition funding that we agreed terms to last year. So you probably recall that we did 3- and 5-year bank debt for that acquisition funding. The 3-year was done purely to give us flexibility to turn that into the debt capital markets. We've remained fairly open-minded about our approach to that term out, and what we've seen is an improvement in the US dollar markets and particularly in some good REIT benchmarks within that market, And that's really given us the opportunity to look at that market seriously in terms of resetting our offshore credit curve. And that leads me to the transaction that Darren was alluding to, so our $300 million US private placement transaction. I'm really proud of the fact that our team and advisors were able to turn our documents around on this very quickly within a two-week period and get us to market quickly. We did an extensive roadshow covering over 35 investors in 10 US cities, and I think that really helped with engagement. Received a fantastic response, as Darren said, over five times oversubscribed, and that enabled us to price at the end of the tight end of our pricing guidance, implying effectively a rate below 5% on a non-fixed basis. What was also interesting about that transaction is that we got historically low A-REIT coupons in the USPP market. So, for instance, our 12-year coupon was 3.56%, a very, very low rate. So what all that means is that we've made substantial progress on our capital management objectives of diversity and duration. The debt capital markets portion of our book now stands at nearly 50%, and our duration is now greater than 5 years, and that's starting to match the weighted average lease expiry profile. Also this morning, interestingly, we did a small tap. It was only $30 million, but significantly it was with a Japanese account on our 2018 MTNs. That was done at a spread under 170 basis points and an all-in yield of approximately 4.9%. And importantly to note on the slides there that despite the repayment of that cheaper US dollar debt, we are still maintaining a cost of funds of 5.8%. And then lastly, but not leastly, there's obviously a note on there that the buyback will not be extended. It was obviously a good use of our capital at the time, acquiring shares at an average of 93 cents. And now with the share price where it is and the acquisition opportunities that we have, it will not be extended. With that, I will hand over to Ross.
Thanks, Mike. I think I'm mic'd up here. Well, I guess turn to slide 9, and I'm not going to talk through it in a lot of detail, but I think the slowdown that we saw coming into Christmas last year has sort of continued in the first quarter, and the chart there tells a pretty disturbing story, although probably the read-through isn't as bad as what the chart suggests. You know, you've got negative net absorption there of 110,000 square metres, and we saw white-collar employment growth actually turn negative for the first time in quite a while in the first quarter. I think what we're sort of seeing on the ground is a slightly different story. You know, that negative net absorption, more than half of that is really associated with Brisbane. A lot of that was foreseen through, I guess, the job cut program that the Newman government had put in place, and a lot of that negative net absorption is really limited to the secondary stock in that market, but we'll talk about Brisbane in more detail later. And I think in terms of, you know, maybe some of the more positive stories around the quarter, we did see net effective rents in Sydney actually move positive for the first time this quarter. For the first time in quite a while, and that's actually a good, you know, we think quite a positive sign. And I think, you know, Kevin and the guys will probably share some anecdotes around what they're seeing on the ground during the course of the presentation and on the property tour. And I guess in terms of the longer term outlook, you know, white-collar employment growth is still expected to be fairly positive. You know, Access Economics is still forecasting, you know, 5,000 to 7,000 jobs per annum over the next couple of years, and then back to the 20,000 to 25,000 from FY15 onwards. And this is really what we expect will underpin, I guess, demand for office space moving forward. Turning to slide 10. And I guess probably looking at each of the markets on an individual basis, so we don't see any one market being massively out of equilibrium, although there clearly are some short-term challenges in a number of the markets. Sydney probably has the best near-term outlook. There's not a lot of near-term supply, and demand is actually improving, as, you know, Kevin and the guys will attest to. Melbourne, on the other hand, is probably at the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of there is a lot of near-term supply. There's about 235,000 square metres of product coming to market over the next couple of years. And that really is going to keep a lid on rents and probably keep incentives high. And we wouldn't be surprised if we see effective rents moving backwards in the order of 5 to 10% over the next couple of years. That all said, interestingly, investors are seeing through that near-term softness in that market, and you're actually seeing some pretty strong transaction evidence in that market through deals like 567 and 8 Exhibition Street. And that's probably because the medium-term fundamentals for Melbourne are actually still fairly strong. It's going to have, in terms of white-collar employment growth, it's going to have more jobs created over the next 5 years than any other CBD, for example. And we think, well, obviously that's going to underpin growth. So assuming that comes true, you know, Melbourne will be in a reasonably good position. In terms of Perth, Perth's clearly been affected by the downturn in the resources sector. And we expect rents there to move sideways at least for the next few years. The story in Perth is, you know, it's not straightforward. Definitely the secondary stock in Perth is going to get hurt a lot harder than the prime stock. Arguably, a lot of the rents in those sorts of assets were pushed to levels that weren't sustainable, just given the shortage of supply and the strong demand that was coming into the, as well, really as a consequence of the resources boom. And we expect to see that unwind. So, you know, I don't think you'll see us investing in secondary stock in Perth in the near term. And we'll talk about Brisbane in a little bit more detail on the next slide. I think one of the themes that's definitely coming out very clearly this quarter, and we've talked about it a little bit before, is really this divergence between prime and secondary, not just from an investor perspective, but also from a tenant perspective. I think we've seen good transaction evidence over the last quarter in the prime assets. So you've seen, you know, 8 Exhibition Streets, 400 George Street in Brisbane, you know, where Rain Square is going to price when that actually prints. You know, I think that's really showing you that there's going to be good cap rate compression for those sort of prime investment grade properties. But as it relates to secondary stock, really cap rates haven't moved. We haven't seen a lot of transaction evidence in those markets. As it relates to tenants, you know, we've seen vacancy in a lot of the secondary stock really blow out quite substantially. You've got sort of vacancy of secondary stock in Brisbane's running about 17%. In Melbourne, it's about 12. In Sydney, it's about 9. And in Perth, it's about 9 as well. And we really think that that trend's probably going to continue, at least for the foreseeable future. Turning to Brisbane, which is obviously a topical market given the acquisition last week, so probably warrants a bit of a deeper dive. It definitely is a market that sort of is very much affected by this sort of prime to secondary sort of situation. Of the 57,000 metres of negative net absorption during the quarter, about half of that was government-related and about a third was mining services. But most of it is still constrained to the secondary sort of stock. And this is a trend that we do think will continue. You've got the government consolidating down its tenancies into 1 William Street. So this is a trend that we think will continue at least for the next couple of years. That all said, we think the outlook for Brisbane is still very positive in the medium term, and that's sort of how we've approached the market and also our acquisition opportunities in that market. It's going to have the highest rate of white-collar employment growth over the next 10 years than any other of the major CBDs. And it's really underpinned by quite a diverse economy, not just exposed to resources, but it's got good natural population growth from migration and the like. So clearly we like Brisbane, given that we've been quite acquisitive. Turning to the transaction side of things, there's a lot of numbers on this page, and I think really there's only just a couple of points to really stress here. One is we're not sort of fans of transactions or deals for deal's sake, and while we have been really transaction orientated in the last 12 months, it really has been a necessary part of executing on the strategy which has required us to remix the Dexus portfolio, but also meet a lot of the strong investment demand from our wholesale clients. Probably the most pleasing aspect of the deals done over the past 12 months has really just been the fact that we've been able to get out of the US at the price and timing that we have, but also being able to reinvest that in high-quality office assets in Australia. And I think a lot of investors expressed concerns when we announced our strategy around the dilution of the office portfolio, and I think, you know, the quality of the deals and we've been able to put the capital to work has hopefully appeased any of those concerns. And our latest transaction, I guess, on slide 14, the 480 Queen Street, it's a 55,000 square metre office building, and there was a lot of information released last week in the media release. It's 5-star Neighbours, 6-star Green Star. It's got large efficient floor plates, 2,800 square metres in the campus and 1,700 square metres in the tower. It's located in the Golden Triangle of Brisbane's CBD. We think it's a very attractive asset, and it's an asset that will have a lot of appeal to tenants in those markets. And importantly, we think we've actually acquired it on very attractive terms and significantly de-risked that project. And these, I guess, some of the, a bit more detail around some of those transaction terms is provided on slide 15. It is a fund through development. essentially where the purchase price is based on capitalised income at PC. So the anchor tenant deals, which are really BHP, Freehills and the Executive Centre, are all capped at 7%. Deals done between now and PC, which will principally be 10-year deals, will be capped at 7.1. And any vacancy at PC will be essentially bought at about $6,000 a square metre. Now, how that's actually calculated will be on a tenancy-by-tenancy basis, and it's a factor of what the target rents are and a discount to those. But essentially, you end up at a number that's about $6,000 a square metre, which we think is very cheap. That vacancy is also going to be subject to a two-year rental guarantee. We'll get a 7% coupon on the way through that will step up to 7.25 and then 7.5, depending on certain events occurring. And importantly, we've negotiated, you know, a range of protections for us as an investor in the project, both in terms of a substantial security package, but also, you know, look forward tests on purchase price, cost to complete tests, high degree of transparency and control around how the project is actually managed on the way through, and key decisions, and effectively negative control around a lot of the major leasing decisions, given that we are going to be the owner of this asset long term, and the developer will essentially exit the project at PC. So the deal structure really protects us from any softness in the market on the downside, and we think it's a very attractively structured and priced asset. If we think of how it would price compared to comps in the market, probably the most recent comp would be 400 George Street, which did sell for about a 6.9 cap rate, which implies about $9,000 a square metre or 9.5 on a post-cost basis. Given the rent guarantees are in place on 480, it implies about a five-year WALE. And assuming that no other leasing is done, we're really buying at about $7,000 a square metre. So we think that on a comparable basis, it's a great deal. And with that, I'll pass you to Kevin.
Thanks, Ross. I won't comment any more on 480. I think there are any other questions, so I can deal with those later. So if you refer to the portfolio update slides next, which is slide 18, that gives you a snapshot of where we are today. Some 81 properties with the recent activity. The WALE is, as Michael mentioned, is a pretty comfortable 4.8 years now, and that gives us great comfort. The office component, obviously, the portfolio at 78% is circa $5.5 billion, and the industrial component $1.6 billion. Very interesting on that page, that top right-hand corner box, 4.6 star NABERS energy rating for the office portfolio as at March. That's a significant number, an outstanding achievement by the team. And if you refer to that next slide, that'll give you a bit more colour around the work that's happened in that space in our portfolio. About 3 years ago, Dexus embarked on a significant program over 3 years of capital expenditure on upgrades to improve the energy performance of the portfolio, spending $30 million of your money improving the office assets, and some outstanding results. You can see moving from 2 and 3 stars in some cases up to 4.5 and 5 stars to achieve that average 4.6. So we're delighted with that. But why do we do it? Why do we spend your money on initiatives like this? We do it because we want to future-proof the portfolio against rising energy costs. It makes tremendous commercial sense. And the other reason, obviously, is it improves the competitiveness of the portfolio in the leasing market. Much more discerning tenants around their total occupancy costs, including what they spend on energy, and also their own CSR objectives and carbon footprints very conscious of. So a lot of our tenants, we're hearing them and we're responding accordingly, and I think a lot of them are delighted with where we've got to with some of their buildings. I'll hand over now to my colleagues who will give you a little bit more colour on the portfolio results for the quarter and a bit more granular content on what's going on in the market. So, Amanda.
Just to turn to the office portfolio in relation to the national leasing markets, it's certainly no secret to say that the markets remain very challenging across the Eastern Seaboard and certainly over in Perth as well. We expect the markets to continue to remain weak for the remainder of the year, particularly as the mining investment comes off the boil and the housing sector begins to recover. Businesses on a whole are acutely cost-focused. They continue to look for productivity gains through reduced headcount and also are starting to really explore workplace efficiency solutions. Having said that, the office market demand in the last quarter is showing some positive signs, and we anticipate demand will pick up towards the latter part of 14 on the back of improving global conditions. There is strong demand for A-grade space, and the flight to quality that we've commented on in previous presentations continues. And we've had some good results across our portfolio, with activity most noticeable in Sydney in the sub 800 gross market, in Melbourne in the sub $550 gross market, and in Brisbane in the sub $700 gross market. Whilst demand for the finance and insurance and legal industries continues to remain weak as we've anticipated, business services such as recruitment and consultancy firms and IT groups are starting to expand, and we've benefited from some of that take up in our Melbourne portfolio, which Scott will allude to a little later on. Demand in the premium market continues to be patchy. It continues to be very thin, and it's a very highly competitive marketplace. And that's going to continue to keep incentives at an elevated level, particularly in cases where tenants are in very dated fit-outs, and that's part of the comment I made earlier about the exploring workplace efficiency solutions, and also in unrefurbished space. Incentives at our March quarter for our portfolio are at 20.7%, and that actually excludes the Lendlease renewal that we've reported on as well. The national vacancy rate, as I think many of you would know, has just ticked up by 1%, as we kind of expected, and Sydney sits around that 9.8%, as Ross alluded to. But we expect that will remain relatively stable across all the markets, with a downward trend over the coming years. Sublease space, as we've often referred to, has also continued to prevail, and it's currently about 1.9% of the stock in all the CBD markets around the country. Sydney's sitting at about 1.6, Melbourne's similar, Brisbane's at 2.7, and Perth just a little under that at 2.6%. Sublease space, of course, provides tenants the opportunity for a solution for cost, and that being an important note to make, that it is most of those options are only available on the short term. Equally, a lot of the transactions that are being done on single floor basis rather than many multi-floors, so there aren't a lot of large tranches of space available for many of the major occupiers who are still out there looking for new premises for 5,000-10,000 square metres. Scott, perhaps you might like to comment.
Certainly. Thanks, Amanda. Just to elaborate on your point regarding growth in business services and IT sector, we've actually directly benefited from some of the expansion down in Melbourne in our Southgate complex. We've recently had Advent One expand and double their footprint within the property, as well as backfilled their premises to an existing business services tenant who's also expanding. In addition to that, we've reached a heads of agreement with a party to occupy and renew their lease for business services. So there seems to be some positive upswing with regards to demand for business services and IT. In addition to that, we have UXC, who's a listed entity. They have consolidated their premises and increased their footprint in the Melbourne marketplace with taking a long-term lease at the DWPF asset at 360 Collins Street. In some cases, incentives have moved higher. However, as Amanda advised, it's very much on a case-by-case basis. It depends upon the age of fit-out, the quality and the level of the infrastructure that the tenant actually has in place within those premises. We've recently completed some renewals at circa 15%. However, some new leasing in the marketplace is edging upwards, circa 25% plus. As demand picks up in the coming years, and the future backfill supply is absorbed, we expect that the forecast incentives will taper downwards. With regards to Perth, there's been a bit of a spike in sublease space in the last quarter. Notwithstanding, in our view, the medium to term, long-term fundamentals remain very solid in that marketplace. More specifically, at our asset at Woodside Plaza in Perth, all the major tenants, Coors, Deloitte and Woodside, have short to medium term growth aspirations. When speaking with Peter Scott from Woodside, obviously last week was the Browse announcement and the postponement. By no means are they shelving that. They're dedicated and focused to reevaluate that project into a more capital constrained vision, and we'll be moving forward with it in due course. Woodside Plaza is a premium building in a strong location, and it has one of the largest floor plates in the Perth CBD. And as adding on to Ross's point earlier, we really see that it's got floor plates of 1,600 metres plus, and that is an opportunity for tenants who are very attracted in the marketplace to the larger floor plates in that precinct.
So thanks for that, Scott. So I think if we look at the environment that we're in, we're obviously in a very challenging macro environment, as Ross and Amanda have alluded to. So, however, I'm very pleased to announce we have very strong quarter three office portfolio results. If you turn to slide 21, I'll run you through some of the key highlights. Quarter three has been our strongest leasing quarter in FY13, with over 45,000 square metres of office leasing transactions. Our teams have been very active this quarter with over 30 transactions in what historically is a very quiet quarter for leasing demand. Key highlights in Sydney include the exercise of the lend-lease option at 30 The Bond, which will commence in March 14 for 5 years, and some recent negotiations at 383 Kent Street over a further 2,500 metres of vacancy. In Lumley Centre in New Zealand, we've managed to negotiate a new lease with Minter Ellison, extending their lease term out to 2021, over about 4,000 square metres, as well as some very good leasing at 45 Clarence Street, which I'll run through later. Our portfolio occupancy on a like-for-like basis has improved to 95.5%. However, this was slightly diluted with the addition of our new acquisitions as we bought into some vacancy at Grosvenor Place and at 39 Martin Place. The portfolio WALE was increased to 5 years, including for the new acquisition metrics. We've recorded a valuation uplift of $23 million, which is about 3.6% up on prior book value, mostly coming from 123 Albert Street in Brisbane, where we saw our cap rate compression of about 25 basis points. And it's probably the first structural market cap rate movement we've seen in the portfolio, and as Ross alluded to, we expect to see a little bit more of that in the next 12 to 18 months. Yep. Pleased to say our retention rate continues to climb, which highlights our focus on our customer strategy, which we're spending a lot of time on, and has been part of the reason why we've recorded very high total return performance year to date.
So having a look at the office lease expiry profile, it's fair to say that the team have been very focused on improving the near-term outlook, reducing our existing vacancies and upcoming expiries across the portfolio. If you have a look at slide 22, I think the results are fairly evident, as seen by the expiry risk improvement, successfully executing leases for 54% of the forward leasing task. The combined vacancy in the FY13 and 14 expiries that you see there in the blue charts have reduced to 11.2% at March from 23.9% in June last year. The remaining portfolio risk is really not of great concern to us. We've got a number of deals under negotiation for this exposure, and I think you'll find if you have a look at our competitors, our near-term expiry is minimal. With respect to the FY15 and beyond exposure, we're very aware and very active in that proactive space of dealing and engaging with those tenants, and we remain very focused on achieving results which, on a case-by-case basis, we're assessing and will ensure that we deliver positive total return metrics. A notable point of difference, I think, that is worth pointing out is that our team at Dexus, we're a very well-seasoned leasing operatives. We've all got strong track record and agency experience, which certainly puts us in good stead to deal with these exposures that we're negotiating at the moment, and I think able to handle the leasing task. If you have a look, to drill down to a little bit more detail, we're having a look at slide 23 into the actual existing vacancies and the near-term expiries. Having a look at 1 Bly Street, which of a lot over the last 12 to 18 months, but we are down to one floor and a couple of suites that remain, and we're in advanced negotiations with a number of tenants at the moment.
50 Carrington Street for those. We're on the investor tour after our quarter one update. You would have known that we're doing a repositioning of that asset. The refurbishment plans are well ahead of schedule, and the foyer got finished today. We're in the final throes with numerous negotiations, and we expect to see some good results in the next quarter.
Governor Philip Tower, where we'll be taking you to on, as part of the property tour today, and I'll provide a lot more colour around the leasing strategy perhaps when we're up there. But obviously we've got a number of vacancies that we're dealing with along with some upcoming expiries, and suffice to say that we're very actively marketing those. The core space, of course, comes up in mid-14, and we're talking to a number of parties for that tenancy at the moment. And then the government in FY15, in relation to their move that they've now announced to 52 Martin Place, we're also talking to some major occupiers of that space as we speak.
Down in Canberra, we're facing a very challenging marketplace down there with election coming in September. We've been running various strategies on that asset to resolve our leasing risk, including whole building tenants and splitting the building up into multiple tenants. We're working through that at the moment, and again, we expect to see some results in our next quarter update.
Grosvenor, where we'll go to immediately after this presentation, again, can provide a little bit more colour about the strategy and the benefits and values we saw in that acquisition. And as Richard alluded to, we've obviously bought into some leasing risk, but our eyes are wide open. The vacancy that is referred to there is the JP Morgan space, and they've obviously been actively marketing that prior to us becoming involved over the last 2 months. And there are some deals currently in discussion, one heads of agreement reached, so there should be some positive results there in the coming months.
At Aussie Australia Square, we're continuing our refurbishment and repositioning of this asset. It's fantastic. You'll get a tour of our new space this afternoon, which will be part of our journey of exploring the opportunities with our prospective tenants. But we're very keen and focused on retaining Nine, so we're confident that will occur.
And finally, in relation to 201 Elizabeth Street and the DLA Piper expiry, decision is imminent, so we anticipate hearing from them soon.
I thought we'd showcase 45 Clarence Street as a quick case study. We had a very successful quarter at 45 Clarence Street, leasing 3,500 square metre vacancy. But it really highlights for me our core capabilities and our ability to execute our leasing strategies. The key takeouts I wanted to share with you was three or fourfold. One is our customer strategy. We're getting very close to our customers, and we're really getting to understand their businesses. Which means we're either retaining them earlier, or we're looking to expand them through the portfolio when it's appropriate. In this particular case, we moved Asian Development Bank out of 400 or 500 square metres into our floor at 45 Clarence Street. Our procurement strategy is showcasing our base building refurbishments are now best in class. And for those that did our tour of 45 Clarence Street last year, you would have learned some of the initiatives that we put in place. But our team's ability to articulate the benefits to the tenants in the marketplace is proving very successful. As Amanda touched on, our leasing experience, not only at this forum, but right through a business is very strong, and we're focusing our key resources on our leasing risk. We've also got very strong agency networks, and we're using them to our advantage. We're being a bit more strategic with our marketing and focusing on tenants where we believe are interested in having a flight to quality, and also targeting tenants from outside the CBD, as we did with 45 Clarence Street with success, bringing a tenant over from North Sydney. So these are some of the successful strategies we've got in place at 45 and right through the portfolio platform. Now I'll hand over to Mark and Scott to run you through the industrial results.
Thanks, Richard. Mark and I will just cover off some market trends on slides 25 and 26, and just an update on the industrial portfolio. As outlined there, take-up has been predominantly from third-party logistics providers in recent times and major retailers and wholesalers. Good example of this is at our Laverton Estate in Melbourne, where we have recently completed the Adidas facility for Toll and are currently under construction with a new Mars facility. These occupiers invest large amounts of capital investment into the warehouse management systems, and as a result have a long-term view and commitment to the property. We also continue to see a strong trend towards companies who are currently undergoing their warehouse functions internally, considering the third-party logistics model. Obviously, given the economy, bottom line is very important, and as a result, a number of parties are actively evaluating whether there's better economies of scale and price to outsource these functions of their business. Mark, can you comment on that?
Yeah, look, probably a very good example is actually in our wholesale portfolio. It's a significant facility of 26,000 square metres that was purpose-built for Colgate Palmolive. And what Colgate Palmolive did is they undertook a supply chain analysis over the 20 years, and they realised that the actual distribution centre was only ever operating at an average of 84% capacity. So essentially they realised that they weren't getting full utilisation out of the facility. So what they've done is they've now transferred the property and all warehouse management, supply chain and transport to DHL Global Logistics. So that's what we mean when we're saying that that is a very much a trend where you're actually moving to a 3PL model. What's important for us is by Colgate staying with the building, it actually gives us a lot of confidence that the actual building is servicing all the needs in terms of what they need to do in terms of their supply chain. I'll keep going, Scotty. In terms of demand, we're seeing a strong demand. We call it flight to quality, but there is a high demand for modern facilities with high building specifications. And I think a very good example of that, Andrew, would be our recent deal with Blackwoods. Blackwoods will be going to Greystanes, going into a 17,000 square metre state-of-the-art facility. What they'll actually be doing is they'll actually be incorporating their national headquarters into the facility as well. Blackwoods are actually relocating from Smithfield, and the bottom line, they're reducing their property footprint from up to about 38% by doing that. Supply still remains constrained in all what I would call the prime eastern seaboard markets. There is a low availability of prime stock, and if I'm looking at Savills Research, you'll look at prime vacancy now within outer west Sydney is actually sitting at 2.6%. South Brisbane is actually 1.8%, and Melbourne's west is actually 1.9% as at March 2013. We definitely see a nervousness in the small to medium enterprises that typically co-locate into secondary industrial estates in inner and central markets, and that's pretty well reflected in both Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney. We've undertaken considerable research in this particular category, and we know that the common denominator is housing and infrastructure. As soon as the activities pick up, we know that the smaller businesses will start to grow, and they'll be taking on contracts in the supporting services industry context, and that will fundamentally drive occupancy and underpin rental growth in these markets, but also in these more sort of secondary obsolete estates. You might want to comment on the Victoria government announcement.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Just with regards to Victoria, as you may have heard, recently, the government's increased the first home owners' buyers grant by $3,000 for new homes and eliminated the grant that's available for existing buyers of existing premises housing. As a result, construction is a leading indicator, especially in Melbourne, so it should hopefully have some flow-on positive benefits to both the office and the industrial markets in Victoria.
Thanks, Scotty. If we're looking at the performance for the quarter for the portfolio, we believe we've had steady leasing performance in a very challenging market environment. The numbers are there, but we've transacted over 31 deals to over 50,000 square metres, an even spread of renewals and new leases. We're actually quite proud of some of the fundamentals. If we're looking at our incentives, we've finished the quarter on an average of 6.3%. That's improving on March 2012, which averaged at 6.8. Another area of encouragement is our passing rents. If we look at the average of all deals conducted during the quarter, we've actually come just under 0.67% for the first time in a long time. We've got average rental growth across the portfolio, where our income's growing at 3.5%, again an improvement on March 2012, which is 3.4%. Occupancy sitting at 94.8. It's 0.5% up on March 2012. And a particular area we're proud of is Silverwater, that the multiple holdings that we call Silverwater Industrial Estate. March 2012, we're at 87% with a WALE of 3.2. We're now at 100% and a WALE of 4.5. We've got some great opportunities within the portfolio, predominantly Sydney-centric in terms of value add. We're exploring, we've got quite a significant team working closely on our South Sydney asset, none more so than 5 to 15 Rosebery Avenue and Rothschild Avenue. I won't talk about Goodman here, but we probably have one of the largest sites in that precinct, so we're obviously very motivated to pursue the high-density residential thing. If we're looking at our North Shore assets, we've got North Shore and Inner West, and the opportunities that we're looking at are more in the retail themes, and I will say they're the non-hardware categories, and we're working together with many parties in that category, and none so more so than Belrose, which we have a significant retail syndicate working with us to pursue an adaptive use for that precinct. I'll now hand over to Andrew.
Thanks, Mark. Just turning to the development activity in the development book. I guess since 2011, which is not so long, coming out of 10 and effectively out of the GFC era, we kind of were early movers in industrial. We'd also just come off the back of completing Bligh and Albert Street. Of the 18 developments we've completed since that period of time, 6 underway at the moment, by value, office is 52%, but by activity, 83% of it has been industrial. So that effectively in the industrial space, we've been building a Bligh and Albert. But as Ross was saying with transactions, sake, doing development basically to deliver new product by increasing of income, particularly in industrial, and we're also doing it to support the growth of the capital partnerships. With the establishment of Australian Industrial Partnership last year, and there is a case study in the back pages of your tour book on that, we've continued to grow a third-party fund through development. In the last quarter, actually, we contributed another $110 million of product to that partnership. 5 properties, and 3 of those were, in fact, specs. Along with those committed developments and other committed developments that we've agreed with DWPF that is now embarking on industrial development activity, growth will continue in the next few years. We've also managed to generate trading profits, and we're expecting to deliver 1.3 this year. All of this is contributing to de-risking our activities and providing the capital for us to recycle into new opportunities to replenish this pipeline. And we're always looking for those opportunities as we've been doing so over the last few years. If you flip to the next chart, this gives a bit more of a flavour of the diversity of the development endeavours now. At a headline issue, we've said we'll do up to 15%. We're sitting at around 5, growing to around 8 in the near term. So we're still growing that capacity, I guess, in the context of our investment tolerances. 30% of that is in the top bar, which is predominantly industrial projects, all of which will complete are completing now and will complete in 2014. 30% of that is actually trading stock, so that's in the process now of if it's being pre-leased and we're in let-up phase for some of those projects that are finishing. The balance of that stock is slated for AIP at Laverton and Greystanes, so there's some pre-committed developments commencing at Greystanes at the moment that are also part of that. The uncommitted development pipeline is now starting to show some office products coming back in. 70% of that uncommitted pipeline is now actually office. There are 3 kind of projects mentioned here. Phillip Street in Parramatta, there's a bit of interest and activity. In that market, we have a DA on foot. We also have a refreshed costings in the current marketplace, and we are looking at seeing if we can move that project forward. Obviously, we wouldn't do that without a significant pre-commitment. We've also got, as part of the Creek Street acquisition with DWPF, there's a podium building there, an opportunity to look at some redevelopment potential. So we're investigating that as we speak, but we wouldn't do anything unless we thought it would stack up. And Flinders Gate, Scott might give you or gave you some colour on the Melbourne market. We have a DA on foot there, we have been looking for the opportunity to kick that off with significant pre-commitment. But with what's going on in the Melbourne market at the moment, those metrics and that opportunity is diminishing. So we're going to head down. Scott, do you want to give some colour on what we're doing?
Yeah, I suppose Flinders Gate market, obviously the Melbourne market conditions are a little soft at the moment. Great thing about that product is it generates strong underlying cash flow at this point in time. Accordingly, we can shelve it, continue to generate the cash flow until the market conditions improve in the coming years. So that's certainly something we will be doing if it doesn't reach our benchmarks.
Right. And then also interesting, or pleasingly, in the bottom half of or the bottom third of that chart, we've now got what I guess we're terming value add properties that we've purchased to reposition. As Richard said, we've done most of the physical repositioning of 50 Carrington Street. It's really now about the branding and the let up. 40 Market Street is also down in Melbourne is also a project that we're working on repositioning, and we bought Archerfield, if you remember, a while ago. We're still in the process of we've done the physical works on that, so that's also another property. These are opportunities which we can convert in the next 2 or 3 years if it makes sense. The reason I've popped 480 Queen Street there, obviously, is that the track record and capability that we've had, that we have in the shop, is going to be put to good use in that fund through investment. So the key takeout really is that the book now is geographically diversified, and also more so now by product type as we're moving back towards office. The flexibility and scale of the projects that we've undertaken in our industrial book, we're still focusing on large stage developments that we're working through, but we've got nimble stuff around the edges. We're taking measured bets on the trading side, and this is starting to give us levers that we can use to enhance quality of the core portfolio, or contribute to fund growth, or generate trading profits. And as I said before, I think we're still well within our 15% tolerances.
Thanks, Andrew. So, guys, I'll now pass over to Kevin. I'll just give you a bit of a view on the office workspace.
Darren, it's topical that we talk about workspace and the evolution of workspace in our own new workplace here at Australia Square. I think we had at the front desk, and it would have been emailed to you on arrival as well, a white paper the research team in collaboration with the ONI team prepared looking at the implications of new workplace on the office market. And obviously we did it with our portfolio in mind in terms of some of our investment decisions over the next little while. So have a good read of that. But just to pick up some of the highlights of why we've done that, a lot of noise in the market around the latest concept being activity-based workplace, or ABW as it's known in the industry, and its near-term impact on net absorption rates clearly. It's interesting, with our own office here, we've reduced our footprint by 10%, but really not significant, but the paper seeks to address really what the total market implications and likely prognosis is for a raft of the market going to this style of workplace. So in terms of the evolution of workplace, I mean, a lot of you would be familiar that the journey over 30 years going from cellular offices to a hybrid of offices and open plan to open plan, hoteling, hot desking, ABW. And where we are today, we think, is the next iteration, which is a bit of a wind back from ABW, and what we call flexible working environments, FWEs, if we want to use another acronym. But what basically the fundamentals of the new workplace, if you like, the last 5 years is around flexibility non-specific, non-permanent desking arrangements, the ability to locate people and teams in a flexible manner according to what you've got on. Technology being the great enabler, allowing your people to agglomerate or locate on parts of the floor or the tenancy to suit your specific need of the day. So you'll see when we come back here, there'll be plenty of us to show you around what we've done here. But our concept is, I suppose, taken ABW but moved it to what we call FWE in terms of neighbourhoods. So we operate in a neighbourhood system where all of our team sits on a large portion of level 25, and that's because we need proximity. ABW doesn't work for a lot of companies. It works for some, banks and insurance companies perhaps, but in our business, our people and our teams need to be in proximity to each other, those that they're needing to talk to on a daily basis. Not to say that when we've got a big acquisition on, Ross always finds a couple of chunky ones during the year, that we pull people together from finance, from the O&I team, from tax and legal and whoever else needs to be involved, and we might just park them in a part of the office for the duration of that project to make it happen. So this sort of plug and play type facility helps us to do that. You'll see the desking arrangements as well are pretty Spartan. They're quite tight, but I think the payback, and the staff really love it, is that there's lots of great communal space, collaboration spaces, very casual plus formal meeting spaces, touchdown spaces, so a lot of different work settings to deal with different things. So it's invigorating for the people, and we've done it because it's on strategy for us. Attracting and retaining those people is very much part of our strategy. Deeper and meaningful relationships with our tenants, which I'll talk to in a minute, is very important to our strategy, and also having the best systems and infrastructure, which you'll see in this space. The technology spend has been commensurate with the quality of what you see in the fit out. So on the tenant relationship piece, just quickly, this is a very big investment for us in marketing our business and our portfolio to our tenants. Some might say, why would you create a workplace and show it off to tenants and encourage them to reduce their footprint? Well, we take a converse view. Our view is that if we open the dialogue about workspace with our tenants and encourage them to think about ways of using their workplace more effectively as a key part of their business strategy, and they in turn get more efficient and more productive, they're more likely to want to grow with us. So we're not scared to get that on the agenda with them. And also, the commercial benefit clearly is if they get more productive, they're more profitable, they've probably got a greater propensity to pay us more rent. So there's some selfish reasons there as well. So that's a bit of a flavour of the workspace. Have a good read of the paper. It's a great bit of work from the research team. Happy to take any other questions on that later. So, Darren, back to you.
Thanks, Kevin. So, guys, just to wrap up, look, it's been 12 months since we sort of put a new team together back here or down here at Dexus. I think when you look back and reflect on what's gone on, we couldn't be happier with where we end up today. We've been able to get together a really experienced team, and not only have we got everyone together, but they are really, really, really working well together and delivering what I believe are very strong results in what is, as the guys have said, a challenging market. And I suppose we've got to come up with another word because we've used it a lot today. The pleasing thing is that we think that challenging market will continue through the rest of this year, but on the back of low interest rate environment, both globally and locally, that we'll see business conditions pick up into FY14 and FY15. So those of you that are following this cap rate compression story, as far as the office and industrial product is concerned, cap rate compression should come through. We'll then get another kicker as we get better results from both occupancy and rental growth in our properties. Dexus today is very, very well positioned for growth. All the work we've done over the last 12 months has positioned us strongly. We're now getting the added kicker of Craig and Michael and the team's work that they're doing on the finance side. So we set this company up now to deliver 3 to 5% FFO growth, and a 9 to 10% return on equity. As we sit here today, you know, we're reaffirming our guidance for this year at FFO per security of 7.75 cents and distribution per security of 5.8 cents. And we sit here today in front of you saying that for next year, we're very, very confident of delivering at the top end of that other range. So thank you for your time today. Feel free to ask any questions as we walk around. And we look forward to walking you through the office later on this afternoon and joining us for a drink. Thanks for coming down.